2021. AstraZeneca and Russian makers of Sputnik to collaborate on vaccine trials. The U.S. is a step closer to a COVID-19 vaccine authorization, but that's unlikely to impact the dark and deadly days ahead. Don't gather with people from outside your home for Christmas, professor says. U.S. could be back to normal by next summer or fall, Fauci says, provided everybody gets vaccinated. Paradigm RELLC warned over fraudulent COVID-19 product. Where things stand as of today on U.S. stimulus talks. And an article, Holidays in a Pandemic. Here's what happened in 1918. First, we'll look at the numbers. From the Odessa American, Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 10,448. Ector County negative, 35,009 out of 46,014 tested, with 557 pending, 154 deaths. Recovered, 8,717. Active, 1,577. ECISD daily cases, 14 students, 3 staff. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, courtesy of the Midland Health Department, as of Wednesday, 174 more unconfirmed cases of COVID-19 inside Midland County, bringing the total number of cases confirmed and unconfirmed during the pandemic to 11,877. Midland Health also reported the 159th COVID-19-related death on Wednesday. The health department recorded the number of confirmed cases during the pandemic, 9,073. It also reported it had confirmed 1,670 active cases and that 5,939 people had recovered. The number of unconfirmed cases through Wednesday was 2,804. From the Texas Tribune, average new cases in Texas increased by 1,993 cases compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On December 10th, 12,211 new cases were reported. Hospitalizations decreased by 106 patients compared with a week ago. As of December 10th, 9,045 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. Average new deaths increased by 68 deaths compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On December 10th, 244 new deaths were reported in Texas. Here are some coronavirus briefs. I'll also include a few headlines about what's going on around the world. The coronavirus will kill more people in the United States every day for the next 2 to 3 months than died in the attacks on September 11, 2001, or Pearl Harbor, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director Robert Redfield said Thursday. The stark warning came as the United States set a harrowing record for fatalities for the second day in a row, surpassing 3,300 deaths Thursday and bringing the U.S. death toll to more than 291,800. A coronavirus model predicts 502,000 deaths in the U.S. by April. At this point, the U.S. coronavirus deaths surpass the nation's World War II fatalities. The Food and Drug Administration said it could authorize the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine as soon as today or early tomorrow, after an advisory committee endorsed the vaccine on Thursday. President Trump expressed impatience with the approval process Friday, tweeting that the FDA is a big, old, slow turtle, while exhorting the agency's leader, Stephen M. Hahn, to get the damn vaccines out now. Health experts are warning it's likely the U.S. won't see any meaningful widespread impacts from vaccinations until well into 2021. Most states expect to exhaust the first Pfizer vaccine shipment within days. U.S. FDA likely to recommend against Pfizer vaccine for pregnant women, committee member says. Australian COVID-19 vaccine trials ended after test subjects return false positive HIV results. Canada will start vaccinations early next week as lockdowns fail to get infections under control. France adopts an 8 p.m. curfew over the holidays, including New Year's Eve. Several states have adopted intensified restrictions, including a midnight curfew in Virginia and new crisis care standards in New Mexico that bar elective surgeries and allow doctors to ration care if necessary. Miami will begin enforcing a curfew this weekend as coronavirus cases surge. Hong Kong temporarily blocks airlines' routes into the city in COVID-19 prevention measure. Germany records its deadliest day of COVID-19's pandemic. Russia hits new record for highest daily increase in deaths since pandemic began. Japan reports record number of COVID-19 infections for second day in a row. AstraZeneca and Russian makers of Sputnik V to collaborate on vaccine trials. From CNN's Mary Ulyashina in Moscow. Pharmaceutical giant AstraZeneca is launching a joint clinical trial with the makers of Russian Sputnik V to test the combination of coronavirus vaccines, according to a statement published on AstraZeneca's Russian website on Friday. Today we announce a clinical trial program to assess safety and immunogenicity of a combination of AZD1222 developed by AstraZeneca and Oxford University, and Sputnik V, developed by Russian Gamaleya Research Institute. It will begin enrolling adults aged 18 years and older, AstraZeneca said. According to the British-Swedish drug maker, a combination of the two coronavirus vaccines may help in generating wider protection through a stronger immune response and better accessibility. Both vaccines are adenoviral vector vaccines that contain genetic material of SARS-CoV-2 virus spike protein, AstraZeneca's statement added. The Moscow-based Gamaleya Institute and Russian Direct Investment Fund, RDIF, which sponsored the development of Sputnik V, said in a statement that they offered AstraZeneca the use of one of the two vectors of the Sputnik V vaccine in additional clinical trials of its own vaccine, which is expected to commence before the end of this year. Russian vaccine Sputnik V uses human adenovirus, while AstraZeneca's is based on chimpanzee viral vector. Russia registered Sputnik V in August ahead of key large-scale Phase 3 trials necessary to establish the vaccine's efficacy and safety. While Phase 3 trials are currently ongoing, the country is already moving towards mass vaccination, with the head of the Gamaleya Institute saying that over 150,000 Russians have been inoculated so far, according to state-run news agency RIA Novosti. The U.S. is a step closer to a COVID-19 vaccine authorization, but that's unlikely to impact the dark and deadly days ahead. From CNN's Christina Maxoris. Thursday saw a major milestone in the authorization process for a COVID-19 vaccine in the U.S., a milestone that comes as the country is deep into a health crisis that is only worsening. The Food and Drug Administration's Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee voted to recommend the agency grant emergency use authorization, EUA, to Pfizer and BioNTech's COVID-19 vaccine. The agency will now decide whether to accept that recommendation, but has signaled it is likely to do so. Officials are scheduled to meet again next week to discuss Moderna's EUA application. The vote, Dr. Anthony Fauci said, is a very important step. While the green light for a COVID-19 vaccine will offer a light at the end of the tunnel, leading experts have warned the worst days of the pandemic are still ahead for the U.S. More case surges are likely to take shape as a result of Thanksgiving travels and gatherings that could drive infection numbers even higher. The U.S. is now averaging more than 210,000 new cases daily. Hospitalization numbers break records daily, with Thursday reporting the highest number of COVID-19 patients nationwide since the pandemic start, more than 107,200, according to the COVID Tracking Project. A CNN analysis of newly released data from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services showed that at least 200 hospitals across the U.S. were at full capacity last week, and more than 90% of ICU beds were occupied in a third of all hospitals. And the virus is claiming more American lives each day than ever before. Wednesday saw the highest daily death toll in the U.S. reported since the start of the pandemic, with a staggering 3,124 COVID-19 deaths. More than 2,700 deaths were reported Thursday. We are in the time frame now that probably for the next 60 to 90 days, we're going to have more deaths per day than we had on 9/11, said Dr. Robert Redfield, director for the Center's Disease Control and Prevention. Don't gather with people from outside your home for Christmas, professor says, from CNN's Adrienne Vault. Aaron Bromage, a biology professor at UMass Dartmouth, advised Americans not to have any large gatherings on Christmas, even if they gathered for Thanksgiving and had no resulting positive COVID-19 cases. You should stay close to only the family members or group that you've been in contact with for the past 10 days, he said in an interview on CNN. We are looking at much worse than what we were at Thanksgiving, much worse, and so now the risk is much higher. Bromage said, and you got away with it at Thanksgiving because you were lucky it didn't come into your home. If you do this again, you're chancing too much fate at this stage, bringing it into your house. Bromage also explained the Swiss cheese model of protection for the coronavirus. No one protective layer is 100% effective, he said. Masks plus distance is additive in regards to its safety. If we're in well-ventilated spaces, that adds another layer of safety. We want to make sure that we put as many layers as possible between each person in order to stop the spread of the infection. U.S. could get back to normal by next summer or fall, Fauci says, provided everybody gets vaccinated. From CNN's Health's Shelby Lynn Erdman. The United States could be back to normal by next summer or early fall if everyone gets a COVID-19 vaccine, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, predicted Thursday. It depends how quickly and how many people want to get vaccinated, Fauci told CNN's Chris Cuomo. If we have a smooth vaccination program where everybody steps to the plate quickly, we could get back to some form of normality reasonably quickly into the summer, and certainly into the fall. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration's Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee voted to recommend emergency use authorization, EUA, for Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine Thursday. The FDA is expected to approve an EUA for the vaccine in the next couple of days. My hope and my projection is that if we get people vaccinated en masse so we can get that large percentage of the population as we get into the fall, we can get real comfort about people being in schools, safe in school, Fauci said. That's what I hope and project we would do if we get everybody vaccinated. Paradigm RE LLC warned over fraudulent COVID-19 product, from CNN Health's Jen Christensen. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration and the Federal Trade Commission said Thursday they had warned Paradigm RE LLC for selling unapproved products that claim to mitigate, prevent, treat, diagnose, or cure COVID-19. The FDA said it considers the product, which the company sells under the name Thymosin Alpha 1, an unapproved new drug sold in violation of U.S. law. It is also misbranded. The company's website implies Thymosin Alpha 1 was tested in government-designated treatment centers and helps with treatment. The website claims the findings were that there was a significant reduction of mortality in the 28-day variation, because it improved oxygen levels in the bloodstream and reduced lung injury, according to the FDA. The FDA asked the company to stop selling the product immediately and gave it 48 hours to email the government and describe what specific steps it took to correct violations. Here's where things stand on U.S. stimulus talks from CNN's Manu Raju and Lauren Fox. The 116th Congress is entering a make-or-break moment. It can either collapse in a colossal failure, or it can all come together quickly to give struggling Americans some desperately needed relief. And now there's a possibility this Congress can end how it began, in a government shutdown. While there are some signs of progress on state and local aid and bipartisan relief talks, prospects are still grim for Congress to get a deal both sides can live with, get drafted quickly, and jammed through Congress, and then on to the desk of a mercurial president who has had no role in the negotiations but can upend them at any given moment. Here's what we're watching today. Leaders need to start talking. To get a deal done by next week, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell need to come to terms quickly. But they aren't even talking with each other and instead are bitterly trading blame as the leadership remains at sharp odds about what can even pass, meaning there's no guarantee any deal reached by a bipartisan group of lawmakers will even get through Congress. Why today is crucial. Friday is turning out to be a critical day on two fronts, both on the COVID relief talks and to keep the government from shutting down for the fourth time in President Trump's time in office. Sticking points on stimulus. The snafu over the stopgap portends the challenges ahead for much thornier issues, namely on a COVID relief package that has dogged Congress for several months, in addition to the $1.4 trillion omnibus spending bill to fund the federal government through September 2021, a massive proposal that the two sides have struggled to finalize, prompting leaders to try to pass the week-long continuing resolution. The bipartisan group of senators and House members that have tried to finalize a deal are expected to release legislative language today on their $160 billion deal to aid states and cities hit hard by the pandemic, resolving a key sticking point, aide said. But there's one big problem. Most GOP senators detest that aid, and McConnell has warned that most Republicans won't support it, meaning it's unlikely to pass the Senate. And now I'm going to read two longer articles. The first article is representative of those struggling Americans that we just read about. From the Washington Post, stealing to survive. More Americans are shoplifting food as aid runs out during the pandemic. Retailers and police departments and loss prevention researchers are reporting an uptick in theft of necessities, like food and hygiene products, by Abba Batrari and Hannah Denham, Washington Post, published December 10th. Early in the pandemic, Jew Park noticed a worrisome trend at the market he manages near downtown Washington. At least once a day, he'd spot someone slipping a package of meat, a bag of rice, or other food into a shirt or under a jacket. Diapers, shampoo, and laundry detergent began disappearing in bigger numbers, too. Since then, he said thefts have more than doubled at Capital Supermarket, even though he now stations more employees at the entrance, asks shoppers to leave backpacks up front, and displays high-theft items like hand sanitizer and baking yeast in more conspicuous areas. Park doesn't usually call the police, choosing instead to bar offenders from coming back. "It's become much harder during the pandemic," he said. "People will say, 'I was just hungry.' And then what do you do?" The coronavirus recession has been a relentless churn of high unemployment and economic uncertainty. the government stimulus that kept millions of Americans from falling into poverty earlier in the pandemic is long gone, and new aid is still a dot on the horizon after months of congressional inaction. Hunger is chronic at levels not seen in decades. The result is a growing subset of Americans who are stealing food to survive. Shoplifting is up markedly since the pandemic began in the spring and at higher levels than in past economic downturns, according to interviews with more than a dozen retailers, security experts, and police departments across the country. But what's distinctive about this trend, experts say, is what's being taken. More staples, like bread, pasta, and baby formula. We're seeing an increase in low-impact crimes, said Jeff Zeisner, a chief executive of workplace security firm Aegis. It's not a lot of people going in, grabbing TVs, and running out the front door. It's a very different kind of crime. It's people stealing consumables and items associated with children and babies. With Americans being advised to brace for a difficult winter amid skyrocketing coronavirus infection rates and the economic recovery nearly stalled, the near-term outlook is grim. More than 20 million Americans are on some form of unemployment assistance, and 12 million will run out of benefits the day after Christmas unless a new relief materializes. Though lawmakers have made progress this week on a $908 billion deal, details are still being worked out, congressional aide said. Meanwhile, an estimated 54 million Americans will struggle with hunger this year, a 45% increase from 2019, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. With food aid programs like SNAP and WIC being reduced and other federal assistance on the brink of expiration, food banks and pantries are being inundated, reporting hours-long waits and lines that stretch into the thousands. Several federal food programs that have provided billions of dollars in fresh produce, dairy, and meat to U.S. food banks are also set to expire at the end of the year. The largest among them, the Farmers to Families Food Box, has provided more than 120 million food boxes during the pandemic and is already running out of funding in many parts of the country. With the United States now registering more than 150,000 new coronavirus cases a day, some communities are reintroducing restrictions in an effort to contain the virus. Most of California is now under strict stay-at-home orders, for example, while states including Nevada, Maryland, and Pennsylvania have issued new indoor occupancy limits. Such orders tend to hit already vulnerable workers in low-wage service jobs in restaurants, retails, and bars the hardest. In Maryland, Jean was successfully juggling college and a job and had just bought her first car when the pandemic crashed down like a sneaker wave. Her son's daycare center suddenly closed in April, forcing her to give up her $15 an hour job as a receptionist. But quitting meant she didn't qualify for unemployment benefits. She says she was denied food stamps at least three times and gave up on local food banks because of the lines. With no stimulus aid and her savings gone by May, Jean said she was out of options. So she began sneaking food into her son's stroller at the local Walmart. She said she'd take things like ground beef, rice, or potatoes, but always pay for something small, like a packet of M&Ms. Each time, she'd tell herself that God would understand. I used to think that if I get in trouble, I'd say, look, I'm hungry. I wasn't stealing a television. I just didn't know what else to do. It wasn't malicious. We were hungry, said Jean, 21, who asked to be identified by her middle name to discuss her situation freely. It's not something I'm proud of, but it's what I had to do. Tracking retail losses. Retailers have historically been most concerned about staff when it comes to what they call shrink. Workers are typically behind about a quarter of the $25 billion in global losses reported each year, a category that includes lost merchandise, stolen cash, and employee errors, security experts say. That changed with the pandemic as customer shoplifting became more pronounced, especially in areas with high joblessness, said Fabian Tiburs, chief executive of Compliant IA, which provides loss prevention software to retailers. There is a well-known historical correlation between unemployment and theft, he said, a connection that is more entrenched in the United States than in countries with more robust safety nets like Canada and Australia. Dollar Tree and Family Dollar, which often are concentrated in low-income areas, have seen increasing instances of theft during the past year, according to spokeswoman Kaylee Painter. She declined to share specific data or protocols, but said the company is continually evaluating and enhancing on-premise security and surveillance systems, as well as our associate training. In Philadelphia, reports of retail theft jumped about 60% year over year, just after President Trump declared a national emergency in March because of the pandemic. They remained at elevated levels through at least July, according to local police data. Though shoplifting tends to spike during national crises, it jumped 16% after the September 11, 2001 attacks and 34% after the 2008 recession, according to the National Association for Shoplifting Prevention, which tracks data from U.S. courts. The current trend is skewing even higher, according to Reed Hayes, a criminologist at the University of Florida and the director of the Loss Prevention Research Council. Hayes has been tracking theft since the coronavirus began sweeping across the United States in March and has phone calls with the leaders of 60 major retail chains every other week to help them prevent losses. Most reports of retail theft have been anecdotal, he said, and even 10 months into the pandemic, it's too early to know the full scope. We believe there is some increase in people who, because of COVID-19, are not able to pay for the items, Hayes said. It's sort of maintained that there may be a slight uptick in need-based stuff, but it's really difficult to tease that out. In Virginia, Sloan, 28, says she has been dropping avocados, mushrooms, and other fresh produce into her bag without paying for them since September. She worries constantly about getting caught and takes only a couple of items at a time. But when you're eating cheap meals every day, sometimes it's nice to have an avocado to spice things up for one night, she said. Sloan, who asked to be identified only by her first name to avoid potential prosecution, worked in the food industry until the pandemic upended her job. Her partner, who worked in retail, was furloughed for months, then quit in August because it no longer felt safe going back to work. But the resignation meant no unemployment benefits. Things are bad. We're late on bills. We're late on rent. Our car is 9 days away from being repossessed, she said. I'm used to being very self-sufficient, and it's an awful feeling to suddenly be so desperate. Like others interviewed by the Washington Post, Sloan said she tends to target major chains because they're better able to absorb the losses than small businesses. Park of Capital Supermarket in Washington, D.C., for example, said he briefly considered hiring uniformed security guards to ward against theft, but decided it was too costly for the family-run business, which has already had to cut more than half its staff during the pandemic. My distrust has gone up since I see people shoplifting every day, he said. I watch the security cameras a lot more often. If we let too many people steal, we'll have to close. Because tracking is spotty, shoplifting is chronically underreported, according to more than a dozen local police departments and sheriff's offices contacted by the Post. Very few monitor and report shoplifting data publicly, and those that do often don't keep tabs on what types of items are stolen. Some store managers said they've stopped calling police for small instances of shoplifting because it's not worth the time or resources, particularly when store employees also are juggling new responsibilities, such as temperature checks and enforcing mask requirements. But many are taking additional precautions. Demand for uniformed security guards and undercover loss prevention experts has risen 35% during the pandemic, according to Zeissner of Aegis. Growing food insecurity. Nearly 26 million adults, or 1 in 8 Americans, reported not having enough food to eat as of mid-November, according to the latest data from the Census Bureau. That figure has climbed steadily during the pandemic and has hit record highs since the government agency began collecting such data in 1998. We're supposed to be the greatest, richest country in the world, and we don't have safety nets for when something like this happens, said Danielle Nirenberg, president and founder of Food Tank, a nonprofit organization focused on food equity and sustainability. People are being forced to steal when they shouldn't have to, and that's a great American tragedy. Alex graduated with a master's degree in May and was immediately in a bind. No job, no money, and with much of the country still shut down, little hope that anything would change. She had spent most of her $1,200 stimulus check on rent and used what little she had left to buy groceries. Everything else, vitamins, moisturizer, body wash, she said she shoplifted from a Whole Foods market a few miles from her apartment in Chicago. It was like, I would spend $10 and get a couple of vegetables, or I would spend $10 on just a box of tampons, said Alex, 27, who asked to be identified by her middle name to speak candidly. She has a job now, earning $15 an hour, but she still struggles to make ends meet. She says she continues to shoplift, something she had never done before the pandemic, every few weeks. She says she moves through the store mostly unnoticed. Usually, she said, she picks up a few bulky vegetables, a bunch of kale, maybe, or a few avocados, to disguise the pricier items she slips into her bag at the self-checkout. I don't feel much guilt about it, she said. It's been very frustrating to be part of a class of people who is losing so much right now, and then to have another class who is profiting from the pandemic. Well, let's just say I don't feel too bad about taking $15 or $20 of stuff from Whole Foods when Jeff Bezos is the richest man on earth. Bezos is the founder and chief executive of Amazon, which owns Whole Foods. He also owns the Washington Post. Whole Foods did not respond to requests for comment. Jean, the single mother from Maryland, said she had shoplifted a few times before the pandemic, driving to a Walmart one state over for cans of formula when she couldn't produce enough breast milk for her infant son. She stopped once the store began locking up baby formula, which many retailers do because of its high price. A spokesman for Walmart declined to comment for this report. But the coronavirus crisis, she said, ushered in a new level of desperation. Finding a job and childcare became increasingly difficult. When money became tight, she prioritized rent and car payments over groceries. My car, my apartment, were things that could be taken from me. And then, where would that leave me and my son? She said. This is going to sound bad, but at least I could try to get food in other ways. Her mother sometimes helped, sending a few $100 or using her own food stamps to pay for chicken and frozen peas. That tided her over until July, when she got a big break, a full-time job in a new state making $16 an hour. Jean has health insurance now and donates to the local food pantry. She hopes she'll never have to steal again, though she says her sense of security is fleeting. I know what it's like to do everything you can and still not make it, she said, and I know that could happen again. Here is our second and final article, another long-form journalism piece for today. This is from the New York Times. Holidays and a pandemic? Here's what happened in 1918. The festive season fell between two deadly waves of the deadly influenza outbreak. Families still gathered, often with empty chairs at the table. By J.C. Fortin, published December 9th. Not long before Christmas, as the pandemic was taking a devastating toll in rural Iowa, Rebecca Tinty was visiting some neighbors who had fallen ill. At the family's farm, she found seven of them, including a newborn baby, bedridden with sickness, leaving a six-year-old girl to take care of everyone else. Miss Tinty stepped in to help, but she couldn't avert tragedy. The mister had been waiting on the rest till he had a relapse and kept on getting worse, till he died a week later, she wrote in a letter dated January 1919. I stayed till the funeral, which was the day before Christmas. Ms. Tinty's letters are now in the hands of her goddaughter's daughter, Ruth M. Lux, 72, of Litterdale, Iowa. Ms. Lux has dozens of old family letters which were passed down from her mother and her grandmother. I call my house the Litterdale branch of the National Archives, she said. Those letters, updates about corn harvests and slaughtered hogs, interspersed with reports of illness and death, are dispatches from the domestic front of a pandemic in which millions of Americans were sickened and 675,000 died, amongst at least 50 million deaths worldwide. It has been attributed to an H1N1 virus that originated in birds. That pandemic, like the coronavirus today, seemed to roll across the United States in waves. The winter holidays in 1918 were marked by grievous loss. They came during a relative lull after the deadliest wave in the fall. Another smaller surge would peak shortly after New Year's Day. But the national conversation around private family gatherings appeared to have been less charged in 1918 than it is today, as many, weary from months of restrictions, bristle at guidance from health agencies to stay home. Hundreds of thousands of people lost loved ones, said J. Alexander Navarro, a medical historian at the University of Michigan and an editor of the online Influenza Encyclopedia. But by the time of Thanksgiving, there really wasn't much debate about whether or not they should get together. So they did, often with an empty chair at the table. At the time, another major event was stealing newspaper headlines, the end of the First World War. Soldiers were returning to their homes, and the Allied victory was cause for celebration. This year, we have special and moving cause to be grateful and to rejoice, President Woodrow Wilson said in a Thanksgiving proclamation, which did not mention the pandemic. God has, in his good pleasure, given us peace. And although soldiers' domestic and international travels played a major part in spreading the flu, news reports from the time suggest that the risk of infection did not stop people from celebrating the Allied victory in person. On Christmas Eve, 1918, the New York Times reported that thousands of soldiers would be welcomed into homes in New York City and invited to attend dances and feasts. At one event at the 71st Regiment Armory on Park Avenue in Manhattan, besides the fun and the dancing, there will be 300 pounds of chocolate fudge made by pretty girls and ever so many pounds of iced cake, mostly made by their mothers, the report said. Other celebrations were more subdued. For many people in the United States, the Christmas holiday was centered around the home, said Penn L. Restad, a historian with the University of Texas at Austin, who is an expert on holidays. Holiday travel was less common in 1918 than it is today, in part because families tended to live closer together, Dr. Restad said. The practice of dragging an evergreen tree indoors to decorate it was in fashion. So were gifts for children delivered by Santa Claus. For many, church services were also a part of the holiday season. And in 1918, Ms. Lux's great-grandmother, Caroline Schumacher, was sad to miss them. I suppose you've seen that the town is quarantined, she said in a letter from Carroll, Iowa, dated December 29th. Don't know how long it will be closed yet. It is terrible when there is no church. It didn't seem like Christmas at all. Because personal letters relayed the details of daily life, they sometimes preserved pieces of history that the newspapers overlooked, Dr. Rastad said. Domestic culture, and to a large degree, consumer culture, is often recorded by women, she added. Ms. Lux's family letters, some of which are hard to read because of wispy handwriting or irregular spelling and grammar, were transcribed in 2014 by Julia Evans, who was then studying history at Wartburg College in Waverly, Iowa, and now manages museum exhibits. Newspapers covered the pandemic, too, and reports from across the United States showed a patchwork of officials' responses to the spread of the influenza. In Hamilton, Montana, the Ravalli Republican reported that a months-long citywide shutdown was lifted in late December 1918, just in time for churches and movie theaters to open on Christmas Day. In Lodi, California, owing to the presence of influenza here, Christmas celebrations have been greatly curtailed, though merchants report a good holiday business, the Sacramento Bee reported on Christmas Eve. There will be no municipal tree this year. And shortly after Christmas, the Chicago Defender published reports about families who had gathered for family visits or church services across Illinois. The reports were interspersed with notices about people who had fallen ill or died from influenza. This year, with coronavirus cases rising and health professionals girding for a surge in infections associated with holiday travel, Ms. Lux plans to stay home alone on Christmas. But her family letters from a century ago told of gatherings as well as grave diggings. I was for 3 weeks busy doing the neighbors' chores and burying the dead, one relative, John Tinty, wrote in February 1919. I helped lay away more people this winter than I ever did in all my life. It sure was awful. Margaret Hamilton, another relative, wrote that she nearly died herself. My heart almost refused to work, and my lips and nails were a purplish black, she said in a March 1919 letter. Sure almost went over. Ms. Lux was most impressed with Rebecca Tinty, the great godmother, whose letters told of multiple trips to take care of friends and neighbors who were gravely ill. This lady was literally the Florence Nightingale of Adair County, Ms. Lux said. So on a windy day in April, the same month the global death toll from the coronavirus surpassed 200,000, Ms. Lux traveled about 60 miles from Litterdale to Casey, Iowa, to the spot where Ms. Tinty was buried about 90 years ago. The grave was easy to find, in a small cemetery at the top of a hill. I thought, no one has put anything on these graves for decades and decades, Ms. Lux said. She laid down a bouquet of silk flowers before driving back home. And that is your coronavirus update for this Friday, December 11th, 2020, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael. Coming up next, we'll bring you some Christmas music to round out the 1 o'clock hour, taking us up to 2 p.m., where we'll have national news from USA Today. And then at 3, our local news broadcast. Here are some of the articles our volunteers are reading today. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, COVID-19, county receives mobile morgue from state. COVID-19 from the front lines. Midland Health. Meyer says hospital not seeing expected spikes in patients after Thanksgiving. MMH expecting to receive first round of vaccines Monday. Commentary. Isolation, plenty of rest, part of at-home care. From the Odessa American. ORMC to continue free COVID tests. MCH ceases free tests, flu shots after funding runs out. Saying goodbye, Barbecue barn set to close. Restaurant to remain open until December 18th. Senator glad for TEA grade pause. Those articles and more at 3 o'clock, and then the Wall Street Journal with more news at 6. And then finally, as I always mention on Fridays, at 7 o'clock, some lighter, more humorous writings than we've been reading this hour with the program On the Lighter Side. That's at 7 o'clock tonight. And finally, we're actually going to end this program with some music, as we always do. And today I'm going to choose a Christmas song for you. As I wish you a great weekend. Stay well and enjoy this classic from the great Ella Fitzgerald.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know. Children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas with every Christmas card.
This is a recording library of West Texas Community Update.
Need help? Know someone who does? If you or someone you care about are feeling overwhelmed with emotions like sadness, depression, or anxiety, or you feel like you want to harm yourself or others, call 911. Call the Disaster Distress Helpline at 800-985-5900 or call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 63 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the upper 40s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center,
this is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Ding dong, ding. Ding dong, ding.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year. I don't know if there'll be snow, but have a cup of cheer. Have a holly jolly Christmas, and when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet. Ho, ho, the mistletoe hung where you can see. Somebody waits for you, kiss her once for me. Have a holly jolly Christmas, and in case you didn't hear, oh by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year.
Have a holly jolly Christmas, it's the best time of the year.
Have a holly jolly Christmas, and when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet. Oh, oh, the mistletoe hung where you can see. Somebody waits for you, yes sir, once for me. Have a holly jolly Christmas, and in case you don't hear, oh by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year.
next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
That's it. Listen, I have had enough. I have
had enough of what?
I am going back to my mother.
As we look back on this difficult year, one debate stands above all else. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? This week, Recording Library of West Texas Radio's series of movies set around Christmas continues with Die Hard.
Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
We thank you one and all and wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
It's Christmas Eve in L.A. But a team of terrorists.
You want money? What kind of terrorists are you?
Who said we were terrorists?
Have their own holiday plans.
And I'm telling you, you just got to kill me.
Okay. We do it the hard way.
But the one thing they didn't plan on was New York cop John McClane.
You really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, mother...
This channel is reserved for emergency calls only.
Lady, do I sound like I'm ordering a pizza?
What does he think he's doing?
Good job.
Here's the artillery on us.
You idiot.
He's an easy guy to like.
Welcome to the party, pal.
And a hard man to kill. Bruce Willis, Die Hard.
The audio described Die Hard, Saturday night at 7 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 63 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the upper 40s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 2 p.m.
Hello, this is Melanie, and I'm reading articles from today's USA Today, Friday, December 11th, 2020, starting with the money section and under the money line column.